Part 1. Identifying and Removing Habitual Thinking. Quote, "Every human being's essential nature is perfect and faultless. But after years of immersion in the world, we easily forget our roots and take on a counterfeit nature." Unquote. That's Lao Tzu. Chapter 1. Yes, you can change old habits. Quote, "I wasn't kissing her, I was whispering in her mouth." Unquote. That's from Chico Marx, which was his response to his wife when she caught him kissing a chorus girl. And another quote, "An excuse is worse and more terrible than a lie." Unquote. Alexander Pope. It's been said that old habits die hard, implying that it's next to impossible to change long-standing thought patterns. Yet the book you are listening to was created out of a belief that entrenched ways of thinking and acting can indeed be eradicated. Furthermore, the most effective means for eliminating habitual thoughts is to go to work on the very system that created and continues to support these thinking habits. This system is made up of a long list of explanations and defenses that can be summed up in one word: excuses. Hence, the title of this book is really a statement to yourself, as well as to that system of explanations you've created. It is my intention that all excuses be gone. Can I make dramatic changes in the way I live? Is it possible to change self-defeating thoughts and behaviors that have been my constant companions for as long as I can remember? Can I really do a U-turn and deprogram myself when I've never known any other way to think and act? I've been depressed, or stubborn, or overweight, or scared, or clumsy, or unlucky, or any other descriptor you choose to insert here, my entire life. Is it even feasible or practical for me to contemplate removing these old and familiar ways of being and open myself up to a brand new me? This program is my answer to those questions. Yes, there is a way available to you right here and right now. You can relinquish any unwanted but long-held thoughts that have become your self-definition. Excuses Be Gone presents a powerful and easy method for removing deeply embedded thinking habits that are preventing you from being the person you want to be. The power of your beliefs to keep you stuck is enormous. Those deeply ingrained notions act as chains, restricting you from experiencing your unique destiny. You have the capacity to loosen these chains and make them work for, rather than against you, to the point that you can alter what you thought were scientific explanations for your human limitations and characteristics. I'm referring to things such as your genetic makeup, your DNA, or the early conditioning imposed upon you when you were an embryo or an infant or a young child. Yes, you heard that correctly. Your beliefs, all of those formless energy patterns that you've adopted as your self-image, have the ability to change dramatically and give you the power to conquer unwanted traits or what you unhappily presume to be your fate. The implacable sciences of genetics and medicine, psychology, and sociology may cause you to feel helpless about overcoming proven facts that are said to determine virtually everything about you. I can't help the way I think. I've always been this way. It's my nature, and it can't be changed. This is all I've ever known. After all, you take what's handed to you, and you make the best of it. All of these are the laments of those who opt to use excuses to explain their lives away. I will be using the word excuses for what many call conditioned ways of being throughout this program. Every self-limiting thought that you employ to explain why you're not living life to the absolute fullest, so you're feeling purposeful, content, and fully alive, is something you can challenge and reverse regardless of how long you've held that belief and no matter how rooted in tradition, science, or life experiences it may be. Even if it seems like an insurmountable obstacle, you can overcome these thoughts, and you can begin by noticing how they've been working to hold you back. Then you can embark on a deprogramming effort that allows you to live an excuse-free life one day at a time, one miracle at a time, one new belief at a time. The new word on beliefs. Have you ever wanted to change some facet of your personality, but another part of you insisted that this is impossible because your genetic program is responsible for how you think, feel, and behave? That latter part of you believes in biologically determined unhappy genes or shy genes or fat genes and bad luck genes, among many others. Due to your luck of the draw, it will tell you you have a set of misery genes along with a sizable cachet of weight-gaining genes, if those are the aspects you want to change. This part means to be helpful, but while it probably wants to protect you from the disappointment of failure, it keeps you stuck in an excuse-driven life. Using the excuse of genetic programming not to do anything about the personal characteristics that you dislike is popular and clearly acceptable in today's culture. So with the aforementioned genetic predisposition as an excuse, living in a constant or unnecessary terror might be excused as an overabundance of fear cells emanating from microscopic strands of DNA attached to your biological originating cellular structure, and you're stuck with it. Thus, a formidable excuse is formulated. No wonder a part of you gets indignant when you attempt to be brave, since it believes, I can't change my biology. A sense of powerlessness ensues when it comes to altering anything about yourself that has become so established that it feels like who you really are. This is particularly true when you observe traits and characteristics that have been with you for as long as you can recall. As if to further cement the idea that you've always been this way into your total worldview, the limiting part of you asserts, there's nothing that can be done about it. After all, I can't change my basic biology. Excuse me. Thanks to the principles I share in this program, you most certainly can. The belief that we cannot change our biology is beginning to be challenged by scientific scholars engaged in cell biology research. It seems that humans do have the ability to change and even reverse some of their genetic blueprints. Openness and curiosity, along with a desire to be free from excuses, are the basic prerequisites for learning about the exciting evidence concerning genetic predisposition. One of the pioneers of the new way of understanding DNA, Bruce Lipton, Ph.D., is a cell biologist who taught medical students before resigning to do research and lecture full-time. In a groundbreaking book called The Biology of Belief, Lipton writes that life is not controlled by genes. In fact, his research led him to the conclusion that they're strictly blueprints. The invisible, formless energy that constitutes the gene's environment is the architect that turns the blueprint into this mystery we call life. Listing hundreds of research results, he concludes that the old medical model depicting life's essential building blocks as physical particles is misleading, incomplete, and in most cases, false. Treating illness more or less exclusively with drugs or surgery to facilitate a healing begs to be re-examined. Lipton's conclusions led to his resignation from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine because he discovered that what he'd been teaching, the model of physical particles as the controlling force in life, was incorrect. He realized that both the human body and the universe itself are mental and spiritual in nature. There's a field of invisible energy with a total absence of physical properties that creates the particles that we call cells. And this invisible field is the sole governing function of the body. So, since the body is not exclusively a physical machine, we can all find out how to control and impact our own health. Even more astonishing is Lipton's understanding that our personal belief systems, including our perceptions, have the capacity to trump our genetic inheritance and our cellular DNA. It's possible to influence the infinitesimally tiny particles we've come to believe are the ultimate determiners of our lives. That is, when we change the way we think and learn new ways of perceiving, we can actually change our DNA. In other words, you can impact and alter your genetic structure by modifying how you see yourself and your place in this glorious mystery called life. Your perceptions have the power to change your genetic makeup. Your beliefs can and do control your biology. Now, this may sound radical or even impossible, yet it is this awareness that will lead you to say goodbye to the excuses you've unwittingly adopted. I encourage you to immerse yourself in the biology of belief. You'll be inspired to reset your mind to the possibilities that your beliefs carry far more weight than you realized in determining what you can do, what you'll undertake, and how far you're capable of going. Let's take a look now at another piece of research that will help you realize what you're capable of achieving. The placebo effect. That the mind controls the body is hardly up for dispute. You've probably heard of documented studies where sugar pills given to a control group, believing that they're a remedy for, say, arthritis, turn out to be as effective as the drug being administered for the arthritis. This placebo effect apparently occurs due to a belief in the effectiveness of the pill. But consider how powerful the mind is when it goes beyond administering a sugar pill to the world of surgery. This is an actual research project. Quote, a Baylor School of Medicine study published in 2002 in the New England Journal of Medicine evaluated surgery for patients with severe, debilitating knee pain. The lead author of the study, Dr. Bruce Moseley, knew that knee surgery helped his patients. All good surgeons know there's no placebo effect in surgery. But Moseley was trying to figure out which part of the surgery was giving his patients relief. The patients in the study were divided into three groups. Moseley shaved the damaged cartilage in the knee of one group. For another group, he flushed out the knee joint, removing material thought to be causing the inflammatory effect. Both of these constitute standard treatment for arthritic knees. The third group got, quote, fake, unquote, fake surgery. The patient was sedated. Moseley made three standard incisions and then talked and acted just as he would have during a real surgery. He even splashed salt water to simulate the sound of the knee washing procedure. After 40 minutes, Moseley sewed up the incisions as if he had done the surgery, and all three groups were prescribed the same post-operative care, which included an exercise program. The results were shocking. Yes, the groups who received surgery, as expected, improved, but the placebo group improved just as much as the other two groups, despite the fact that there are 650,000 surgeries yearly for arthritic knees at a cost of about $5,000 each. The results were clear to Moseley. Quote, my skill as a surgeon had no benefit on these patients. The entire benefit of surgery for osteoarthritis of the knee was the placebo effect. Television news programs graphically illustrated the stunning results. Footage showed members of the placebo group walking and playing basketball, in short, doing things they reported they could not do before their, quote, surgery, unquote. The placebo patients didn't find out for 2 years that they'd gotten fake surgery. One member of the placebo group, Tim Perez, who had to walk with a cane before the surgery, is now able to play basketball with his grandchildren. He summed up the theme of this book when he told the Discovery Health Channel, in this world, anything is possible when you put your mind to it. I know that your mind can work miracles. And all of this is from The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. I believe that this kind of research offers motivating evidence for making a commitment to the excuses be gone paradigm. Another recent procedure may completely reverse an old medical model. It seems that a man's forefinger was accidentally sliced off at the top knuckle, and by altering genetic instructions, a team succeeded in regrowing a new half-inch top to his finger in 4 weeks. Fingers are genetically programmed to stave off infection when an injury like this occurs, so the medical team replaced his sliced-off stub with stem cells programmed to grow a finger. The subsequent new growth included the nail, cuticle, and flesh. This man's DNA was overturned by introducing newly programmed instructions. In a variety of studies on severe depression, heart disease, rheumatoid arthritis, ulcers, and even cancer, the power of the mind to overcome these maladies trumps the conventional medical wisdom of treating the cells rather than the environment in which they reside. The new biology is clearly indicating that beliefs, some of which are conscious and most of which are subconscious or habitual, determine our physical and our mental health along with our level of happiness and success. Author James Allen observes, we do not attract that which we want, but that which we are. I've contemplated this idea for a long time. Until recently, I accepted the idea that what we are is pretty much formulated by a complex genetic input and strands of DNA inherited from our parents and other relatives. But I've really changed my mind. My new personal philosophy is that who I am is first and foremost determined by what I believe. And that leads me to consciously focus on the fact that limitations or traits inherited from my ancestors are absolutely not the final word. For me, There's now a surprise tucked into James Allen's quote, "By changing my beliefs, I change who I am." As a result of this shift in my beliefs, I've attracted some new and wondrous features into my life, including being prompted to write this book, Excuses Be Gone, and share its insights with you. As you work your way through this program, remember that what you are is what you believe, not what you were handed genetically. If you stay focused on what you are as a set of beliefs, you will align with the same kind of energy. As you listen to this program, remind yourself that you attract what you are, not what you want, and what you are is your beliefs, not your cells. As the biology of belief establishes, your mental activity is strong enough to overcome material particles and the influence of early conditioning and programming that you unwittingly adopted through your formative years. Your lingering early programming. In addition to our genetic makeup, the other big excuse that most of us use to justify unhappiness, poor health, and lack of success is the family and cultural conditioning we've been programmed with. To that end, there's a fascinating area of inquiry known as memetics, which deals with the mind and is analogous to the relationship of genetics to the body. So as the basic unit of genetics is the gene, the basic unit of memetics is the meme. Yet unlike an atom or an electron, the meme has no physical properties. According to Richard Brody in his work, Virus of the Mind, it's a thought or a belief or an attitude in your mind that can spread to and from other people's minds. Richard Dawkins, the Oxford biologist who coined the word meme, describes the process in his book, The Selfish Gene. My understanding is that memetics originates from the word mimic, meaning to observe and copy behavior. This behavior is repeated and passed on to others, and on and on and on the mimicking process goes. The key point is this: transferring an idea, an attitude, or a belief to another is done mentally. We won't find memes by turning up the magnification on any microscope. They pass from mind to mind via hundreds of thousands of imitations. By the age of 6 or 7, we've all been programmed with an endless inventory of memes that act very much like a virus. They aren't necessarily good or bad. They simply spread easily throughout the population. Once a meme is in your mind, it can and will subtly influence your behavior. This is one of the ways you acquire a huge category of excuses that keep you in a rut. For example, my memes made me do it. I can't help it. These ideas or beliefs or attitudes have been passed on to me from one mind to another for generations, and there's nothing I can do about it. It's just the way I think. These memes have been the building blocks of my mind, and I can't deprogram myself from these viruses of the mind. They just keep replicating and spreading. These ideas or memes are so much a part of me that it's impossible for me to disinfect myself from the results of all of these mind viruses. Every excuse you hear in this program is, in reality, a meme that was once planted in your mind. Richard Brody uses the word virus to describe what happens in the mind through mimicking and imitating. The core purpose of a virus is to make as many copies of itself as possible by penetrating wherever an opening occurs and spreading itself to as many hosts as possible. Similarly, you're a host for countless memes. They're the entrenched thoughts and behavioral characteristics of your personality. You spent years repeating and replicating ideas that were traveling from one mind to another, spreading these ideas and beliefs to many others. Memes die hard because they become who you think you are. Shedding them is like trying to discard one of your vital organs, and it taps your life energy. Many memes, in fact, were firmly implanted by your parents during your early family history. It will come as no surprise that they were easily transferred to you from your parents or your grandparents. Since ideas get fixed in your mind by spreading from other minds, they become your reality, often for your entire life. Personally, I find it fascinating that there are invisible little units that I've allowed to be implanted in my mind which continue to impact how I think and behave today. Moreover, I've acted on these mind viruses and have passed them on to my children. Unwittingly, I've become a carrier. Here are some examples that continue to crop up in my life. I grew up with a depression mentality. Even though I was born in 1940 at the tail end of the Great Depression, my parents and grandparents lived through hard economic times and shared a lot of their scarcity messages with me. Don't spend recklessly, save for the future because things will only get worse. There are shortages everywhere. Food is in minimal supply. Don't waste anything. Eat everything on your plate. You don't have enough money. These ideas were invisibly passed on to me as I grew up in the Midwest in the 1940s. I mimicked or imitated these ideas and allowed myself to become an instrument of these mind viruses. They grew in me, and I spread them wherever I went until they became fully ensconced in my mind and many of my actions. Although I'm now in my 60s, these memes are very much alive today and are still attempting to replicate and spread. To some extent, they serve a purpose, although they occasionally work overtime. My world isn't endangered by poverty, for instance, but I'm still a financially cautious person who likes to save rather than dispose of items retaining some usefulness. I respect those attitudes, and they have no doubt originated in my childhood by being programmed into my habitual subconscious mind. But do I really need to retrieve used-up toothpaste tubes discarded by my children in waste paper baskets and strenuously squeeze out another 2 weeks' worth of product when I've earned enough to buy the entire toothpaste factory? Here's another mind virus I've noticed lately. I must have imitated sulking when I didn't get my way as the youngest of three boys or as a child in a series of foster homes because I remember my adult forms of sulking, pouting, and even yelling when I was in my 30s and 40s. Recently, I was alone in my office feeling frustrated because I couldn't locate something I needed. As my frustration mounted, I became increasingly irrational. I raised my voice, loudly protested, although there was no one else there, used profanity, and stomped around the house until I was distraught and had given myself an upset stomach. This incident lasted 1 or 2 minutes, and then I finally calmed down and found the book I thought was the culprit in my private drama. Why am I admitting to this silly scene, given my desire to be seen as a rational spiritual teacher? Because it illustrates a point I'm making in this opening chapter. As an embryo, an infant, and a young boy, I must have seen this kind of behavior and mimicked it. The meme infected me, replicating and spreading from a relative or a friend's mind to mine. And now, some 60 years later, I could have a built-in excuse for behaving irrationally enough to feel embarrassed by my infantile behavior and for making myself sick. The excuse is right there for me to use. I've always overreacted to frustration. It's just a part of me. I don't have any control over stomping around and blaming who knows what, using mild profanity and being immobilized because I can't tolerate my frustration. The possibilities are inexhaustible for excusing this behavior. But the question I must ask myself is, do I really want to hold on to these habitual behaviors that are ultimately capable of making me sick? Just like me, you have thousands of imitated thoughts and actions that were absorbed through contact with individuals in your childhood environment. When mind viruses serve you, it's a pleasure to observe them and express silent gratitude. But when they continue to plague your life, inhibiting you from achieving your desires, then you're on notice to start shedding them. The point is that these mind viruses, or memes, can work against you in a myriad of ways today, but you can also change them. I hasten to add here that by becoming aware of my own inclinations to use old, no longer sensible or practical responses to my frustrations, and by being willing to do the deprogramming work on my long-held thoughts, I now notice those infantile temptations and choose a healthier way. The bonus is that I'm more effective at locating the missing items I used to perplex over. Thinking that you'll always be poor, unlucky, overweight, or underweight, that you'll always have an addictive personality, that you'll never attract your soulmate, that you'll continue to have angry outbursts, that you'll always lack musical, artistic, or athletic ability, or that you'll forever be shy because you've always felt that way, these are excuses. And when you see them for what they are, you can eliminate them. On the other hand, if you find them to be firmly entrenched personality traits and habits of thinking that can't be challenged, you'll symbolically suck your thumb and cry when life doesn't appear to cooperate. Believe me, though it's far more energizing and fulfilling to practice the excuses begone paradigm, using a new set of thinking habits will enhance your life and help you attract all that you really are. At the same time, you'll be modeling a new and a better way to live for the people in your environment who are unwitting victims of the excuse virus. You've been a mimetic superstar since birth, mimicking beliefs and behaviors from other influences beyond your family and social structure, influences from your religious training, ethnic culture, television programming and advertising and the like have become a fixed part of your habitual mind. It isn't my purpose to examine all the ways you've acquired beliefs, since that's something only you can do. I wrote this book and created this program to help you gain awareness of the excuses you're using for behaving in ways that don't help you to achieve the level of health, happiness, and success you desire. I agree with the Emperor Marcus Aurelius, known for his brilliance as a leader of men and a spiritually conscious being. He is reported to have said, quote, "Our life is what our thoughts make it," unquote. Your behaviors are supported by your thinking patterns. That is, your thoughts truly make or break your life. While some of them are operating on a conscious level and are easy to recognize, others are deeply embedded within your subconscious. However, I prefer to call this deeply programmed or almost automatic second nature part of you the habitual mind. For me, subconscious implies being below the level of creative awareness, a sort of mysterious entity that can't be known. Since the central theme of this program is that anything used to explain thinking and acting in the same self-sabotaging ways is an excuse, it seems to me that calling it subconscious is really underscoring this notion that I can't help it, I can't talk about it, and I certainly can't change it, because it is, after all, below my conscious level where I do all of my living. I personally find it hard to work with a part of myself that's not within my conscious life. Therefore, I choose to call this huge reservoir of emptiness a reservoir that pushes us all away from our divine dharma as well as our optimal level of health, happiness, and success, the habitual mind. And while these types of thoughts might seem to be unreachable, I assure you that they'll come to the surface with an excuses-begone attitude. Kissing the big excuses goodbye. This opening chapter has introduced you to recent research and observations that are increasing our understanding of human nature. My purpose is to help you use this information to alter the parts of your life that are hampered by old science and old thinking. In summary, there are basically two big excuses we all utilize. The first one is, I can't really help the way I am. After all, people can't change their DNA. My genetic makeup is the culprit. The new biology says that there's an energy field surrounding and contained within all of your cells, and this field is influenced by your beliefs. Moreover, it is out of this field that all particles are created. It's the sole governing function of the body. Something like 95% of us do not have genetic reasons for illness, depression, fear, or any other condition. Here in the 21st century, science invites you to stop believing that you're a victim of your genetic makeup, because a large body of evidence demonstrates empirically that your beliefs can change your genes. I encourage you to examine this mind-bending idea at greater depth than I'm able to offer here. There's an invisible part of you that you can call intelligence, higher function, Tao, thought, belief, spirit, God. You choose. The second big excuse is rooted in your early history and family conditioning. It impacts you in so many ways that you'll probably feel it's an impossible to be free of aspect of yourself. Kiss this one goodbye as well. Just because you've been infected with a tradition meme and programmed to repeat it and pass it on to future generations, this doesn't mean you're unable to disinfect yourself and reprogram your inner world. These funny little non-things called memes are thoughts that you allow to become your master. And make no mistake about it, every excuse you've ever used is really a meme disguised as an explanation. Yet you can deprogram yourself from these mind viruses. A virus isn't concerned with whether it's contributing to your well-being or your ill-being, because it only wants to penetrate, replicate, and spread. But you don't have to be a victim of anything that was transferred from another mind to yours. Your beliefs have made these memes seem like a second nature to you. While excuses are just thoughts or beliefs, you are the decider of what you ultimately store away as your guide to life. A short discourse from the Dhammapada gives a sense of the route individuals travel as they advance toward their own inherent perfection and self-realization. Savor this ancient wisdom and incorporate its message with the modern understanding of genetics and memetics. Quote, "All that we are is the result of what we have thought. It is founded on our thoughts. It is made up of our thoughts. If one speaks or acts with a pure thought, happiness follows one like a shadow that never leaves." Unquote.